Welcome to Mount Olive this morning. So glad you joined with us today as we continue our series on the church. We've been in this series. We're actually kind of we're at the halfway point, 3 out of 5. So that's kind of halfway, I guess, in this series. And in this series, we've been doing a news flash kind of each week, and we got a new one this week. But just to kind of catch you up, if you missed a week or two, the first week I really surprised all of you when I stunned some of you when I told you, news flash, the church is not perfect. Now most of you were like, "Duh, Elvin," and some of you looked over to your spouse, you're like, "Honey, we got to get a new pastor. He's losing his edge. We got, you know, he's just telling us stuff we already know." But, you know, the church is not perfect. And then last week, maybe a little more surprising to some of you, the news flash was the church is not for the perfect. The church is, this got some of your attention because we realized the church is actually for broken sinners. Like a hospital is for sick people, Jesus came for those who are broken and those who are sinners. And so the church is not for the perfect. In fact, the only prerequisite to being part of the church or being part of the family of God is to admit that you're not perfect and that you have a need for God. That's one thing that can keep you out, is if you have too much pride, because then you have no need for God. Today, I think the newsflash will be a little bit even more surprising. I told you they get a little more surprising each week. And the newsflash for today is the imperfect church forms us. Now, there's a lot of reasons to give up on the church. We've seen some in this series already. I mean, the church, there's leaders in the church, and some maybe you know personally, and some you know see on TV or you've heard about, and they're corrupt. There's corruption in the leadership in many, many churches. There's corruption within the church. I mean, we saw that already in this series. I mean, there's hypocrisy in the church, and some church people are judgmental, and they say one thing and live another. And so there's just a lot of reasons that you could say, "I'm just going to give up on the church." And probably you even have some personal reasons. I mean, you knew a church person once. You knew a Christian once. You did business with a church person, and they hurt you, and they caused pain in your life. Or maybe it was just the organization. It was just the church organization that hurt you at some point. And so there's personal reasons, and I don't minimize your own personal reasons for saying, "Here's why I think I could give up on the church." In fact, probably if we wanted to, we could take an entire Sunday in this series and just take turns sharing our story of the grievances we have against the church, the grievances we have against church people, and how we've been hurt, and how this is so personal. And if it is very personal and very raw for you, I just want to apologize and say sorry on behalf of the church. I admit the church is not perfect, and the church can cause a lot of pain. And so there's a lot of reasons to give up on the church, but I think there's better reasons to not give up on the church. And let me, this message today and next week's message, I call these the trump cards, to not give up on the church. Now, just because it's the trump card and there's better reasons not to give up on the church doesn't mean that I minimize the pain that you've had from the church, okay? Hear me out. But what I want you to understand is, although your pain may be great and although there may be great reasons to give up on the church, there are trump cards. And these trump cards, these reasons, are even greater reasons to have hope in the church and not to give up on the church. And one of the trump cards is this newsflash: the imperfect church forms us. The imperfect church forms us. The church isn't perfect, I get it, but it's the church, even though it's imperfect, the church still forms us into the image of Jesus. Here's how the writer of Hebrews puts it in Hebrews chapter 10. He says this: "Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful." Now the author, especially in chapter 10, but all through Hebrews, especially in chapter 10, the author has been talking about how in Jesus we have hope. We can approach a holy God because in Jesus, our sin has been wiped out, it's been covered over, and we can approach a holy God. And so our hope as followers of Jesus is Jesus. And so he says, "Let us hold on unswervingly to the hope that we profess." Don't turn to the right or to the left. Hold on to the hope you have, and it's in Jesus. Now, how are we going to hold on to the hope? said, I'm glad you asked. Let me just continue and let you know how we're going to hold on to the hope without turning to the left or to the right. Here's how you hold on. And let us, he says, consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another. And all the more as you see the day approaching. So the writer of Hebrews is saying, or maybe suggesting, that we hold on to the hope that we profess by being connected and part of a church. Not giving up meeting together, spurring one another on. Which means this, you can't walk the Christian life alone. In fact, God never intended you to walk the Christian life alone. The church is not just important or beneficial. The church is actually critical to your journey with Jesus. We follow Jesus together. We do not follow Jesus alone. And it says, don't stop meeting together. Some are in the habit of doing, which implies it's to their own detriment. But keep meeting together with the intention to spur one another on. Now that word spur, it means like provoke. In the negative sense, it means provoke one another. But in the positive sense, it means, you know, excite one another, encourage, stir one another up. You know, years ago, I'll give you an example of what it means to spur or stir others up. But years ago, I worked for the I think he was the largest cattle farmer in all of Canada. His name is Cor Van Ray, and I worked for him one summer between college years, and I'd never really worked with cattle before this, and so they you know, sometimes we had to get the cattle moving, and we had to do different things, and along the way, they gave me a stick, and you pushed a button, and then you touched the cow, and they just start running and going crazy. It's a cattle prodder, and it shoots electricity and so on, and what I realized that year working with cattle is you got to get pretty excited. And if you just come up to them and say, okay, come on, let's get going, they'll just kind of do this at you. They'll just stare at you. Like, what? So you yell and holler and you get, you know, and you try and get one of them running in a certain direction. And sometimes you use that pokey electricity thing and you get them going. And here's the thing with cattle. If you can get one or two running, all of a sudden it's like the others just start following. I think sometimes as humans we're this way. We need a little bit of a electricity shock, a little bit of what Hebrews says, spur. We need to spur one, we need to excite one another. We need to get together and push each other. And sometimes if one of us or two of us start going, all of a sudden everyone just starts coming along. And that's the beauty of the body of Christ. And this is what we do as we get together. We spur one another on. In fact, in your small group, you should be part of a small group. And in your small group, you should get together and you should spur one another on to love and good deeds. Say, hey, how are you doing in sharing the gospel at your workplace, with your family? How are you doing treating your wife or your husband? Are you loving them? You're spurring one another on. Pray for me. I just need some prayer right now because I got a coworker, and his name's Pastor. Anyways. But just, you know, spur one another on to love and good deeds. You know, a while back, I was talking with some leadership. This was a number of years ago. And we were talking about, you know, how do we make our church more hospitable and loving? Because we want to be a loving, accepting church. And we're talking as leaders. And all of a sudden, you know, someone just piped up and they said, you know, why do we have to program these things? Shouldn't we just be doing this? And we're all like, yeah, we should be, but we don't. So we have to spur, we have to find ways to spur one another on to love and good deeds. And don't stop meeting together, because here's the deal. If you don't show up, nothing can happen for you or in you. If you don't show up, you can't be part of spurring others on. And so he says, don't stop meeting together. Come together, because in coming together, you can encourage one another. Some scholars think that the Hebrew writer was actually writing to a group of people who in the area were separating themselves from the church and saying, I'm just going to do this on my own. I don't like the church. I don't like the organization. So I'm just going to do this on my own. And he writes this, don't stop meeting together as some are in the habit of doing. But keep getting together. Show up and spur one another on as you show up. There's a neat proverb, from Proverbs, I think it's 27:17, says this, as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. You know, we know this to be true in every area of your life. If you've ever worked out, somehow you just work out harder when there's someone beside you working out with you, right? It becomes competitive, you know? I can't lift less weights than that guy or run slower than her, you know, or whatever it is, right? And so it gets, you know, or a trainer. We have personal trainers. Why? Because one person sharpens another. And you need to have that some of that pushback, and we get better. And we know this in all of life, and it's true spiritually as well. And that's why the writer of Hebrews says, listen, the church forms us. Spur one another on. Don't give up getting together. There's no lone rangers when it comes to following Jesus. We follow Jesus together because the imperfect church forms us. Now, that's maybe not super surprising, but here's maybe what's also surprising about this statement. The imperfect church forms us, as we talked about, as we spur one another on. But here's what's maybe even more surprising. It's not just the imperfect church that forms us as we spur one another on. It's actually the imperfectness of the imperfect church forms us. The imperfectness, the diversity, and even the things done wrong to each other that forms us into the very image of Jesus. Listen to what Paul says, I think, regarding this very thing. He writes this to the church at Colossae. And remember, he's writing to Christians. He's just told them, you know, in Christ, your life is hidden in God in Christ, and you're a new creation, all these things. And that means you don't live the way you used to live, you know, with sexual immorality and impurity and lust and greed and idolatry and rage and anger and all these things. Put that off, because you have a new life now. Your life is hidden in God with Christ. And then he says this. He says, therefore, because of all this, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved. So these people he's writing to are God's chosen people. In Ephesians, he writes it this way. It's very interesting. He says, listen, before the foundations of the world, God chose that those who would be in him would be holy. That means anyone, God, before the creation of the world, said, anyone who's going to be in me through Christ is going to be declared holy. As God's chosen people to be holy, set apart, and dearly loved. Set apart and dearly loved. Now, surely, people like this don't have problems with each other. This is the perfect church, right? The church at Colossae. Because they're holy and they're chosen and they're loved. And then he says this. Be formed into the image of Christ. And here's what it looks like. Clothe yourselves with compassion and kindness and humility, gentleness and patience. Now, to most of us, we read over that list and it's like, okay, be nice to each other. What's the difference between compassion and humility and all these things? It's just to treat each other nicely. Well, N.T. Wright, he differentiates these words, and I'm just going to do it really quick. But I like how he puts it. He says, you know, compassion is how we view others. In the church, he's writing to church people. As you view others, view them with compassion. A heart that's sensitive to who they are and what they are and what they need. View them with compassion. Kindness is how we interact with each other. Not hard or with rudeness, but with kindness. So if compassion is how we view people and kindness is how we interact with them, humility is how we view ourselves. View yourself rightly. As Jesus was humble and he would forego himself to die on a cross for us, he put our interests before his own. Act in humility. Think of yourself that way. So compassion is how we view others. Kindness is how we interact. Humility is how we view ourselves. Gentleness is how we approach others. With gentleness, meekness, not weakness, meekness, gentleness. And then lastly, he says, and be patient with each other. Be patient with each other. Now, the word patient, another word for patient means long-suffering. I'll tell you a story that kind of helps us understand what patience means, what long-suffering means. This past summer, Mandy was driving to church with the kids. And as she was driving by, she drove by Uncle Matt's house. And Uncle Matt, it always snows for some reason in the winter, always snows on Saturday night. So Sunday morning, he was shoveling snow in his driveway, and they drive by, and they all notice, oh, Uncle Matt's shoveling. They come to 9 o'clock service, they show up at church, and Uncle Matt shows up at church. But Noah didn't figure that out, I guess. And they're at church, and Mandy drives home after church, like, you know, 2 hours later, an hour and a half later. And there, Uncle Matt had gone home, hadn't finished it before church, so he was finishing up his driveway after church. And Noah pipes up from the back, and he says, oh man, Uncle Matt's a long shovel guy. Which was a 4-year-old way of saying, he's shoveling for a long time. He's a long shovel guy. And here's what long suffering means. Here's what patience means. It means being a long suffering kind of person. It means when other people would give up, you're still shoveling. You don't give up. You shovel longer than anyone else. You just hold on longer than anyone else would. You don't. When other people would give into anger and resentment and they would respond with anger and resentment, you're a long-suffering kind of person. Patience. And Paul says, you need to be this kind of people. Listen, you're chosen. You're holy. You're dearly loved. Doesn't that mean we wouldn't struggle with, you know, all these different things? Why would we need to be kind to each other? I mean, people will never wrong me. Why would I have to be long-suffering with those in the church? Because they're already Christians. Aren't we all just going to get along? He says, no. Because Paul understood something about people, and he understood something about the church. It's imperfect. And so he said, be gentle and compassionate and humble. And be a long-suffering kind of person. And then he says this, and bear with each other. Which in the church, some of us interpret it this way. Sick a bear on others. You know, there's some people you just want to send a bear after them, right? That's not what it says. It says bear with one another. Bear means put up. Put up with each other. Put up, be a long-suffering kind of person. Put up with one another, and here's why. Because the church is imperfect. It's diverse. We have differences. You know, there's a lot of differences in the church. There's differences of personalities. And some of your personalities clash with other people's personalities. They just do. They just clash. You know, some of you just talk all the time, and you want to be heard all the time. And some of you, you don't want to hear people all the time. And your personalities clash. Some of you come to church and you're offended if no one shakes your hand and says hi. Others of you are introverts and you're like, I just hope no one talks to me today. And you're offended if someone shakes your hand and says hi. Why? Because we're different. And Paul would say to all of us, he said, bear with each other. You're different. Be a long-suffering kind of person. You know, some people in the church are feelers. I mean, you just want to talk about your feelings all the time and you want to go deep into your feelings. Others of you are thinkers. You're thinking, what is a feeling? And you don't want to talk about feelings ever, ever. You don't want to talk about feelings. And we're different. And Paul says, bear with one another. Bear with each other. You know, we have differences of personalities, and we have to learn to be kind and compassionate, to view each other and approach each other with gentleness about these things. But we also have differences in theology. You know, some people may say, you know, or here's a question, should women be pastors and elders, or should women not be pastors and elders? I guarantee you, in this building right now, we have differences of opinion on that. And Paul would write to the church, he'd say, bear with each other. Bear with each other. You know, have we been chosen by God, or did we choose him? Is there free will, and if so, how much? We have differences of opinion on that. And Paul would say, bear with each other on these things. How charismatic should we get in church? Should we raise our hands? Are we allowed to speak in tongues? Are there miracles still, or did those die? We would differ on that. And Paul would say, bear with each other. You have differences. Be gentle and kind. Be humble, even in the way you view yourselves. We have differences because of the generation gap we have in our church. There's differences about, you know, what songs should we sing and what songs shouldn't we sing. We have differences about how loud should the music be and how not loud should the music be. And here's the deal. That's not even a generational difference, because I've had in the same week a conversation with two seniors. One said, we need it loud so I can hear. The other said, it's too loud. And Paul would say, bear with each other. Bear with each other. You know, keeping on the music thing, I know this about you as a church, us as a church. Some of you think we sing way too much. Two or three songs, that's all we should do. And others, you think, Elvin preaches too long, we need to sing more. Bear with each other. Bear with each other. We won't get it right every... We're going to have differences. And Paul would write to the church and he'd say, listen, you're chosen, you're loved, you're holy. Bear with one another. Bear with one another. In spite of your differences, bear with one another. And here's the thing. The church is imperfect because we're different. We're diverse. But we're also sinners. We learned that last week, didn't we? And here's the deal. Because of our differences, and also because we're sinners, eventually we're going to wrong one another. And so Paul says this. He says, bear with each other and forgive. Forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive. Grievance means anything that you hold against someone because they wronged you. In fact, you may be even right, that you have a right to have a grievance and they owe you and you hold them to that. And Paul says, don't hold them to that anymore. Forgive any grievances. Grievances can also be perceived wrongs. You know there's perceived wrongs where you think someone wronged you, and maybe they didn't even, but you've perceived it. It works like this sometimes. You know, you walk, you know, downtown or a church or the grocery store, and you say hi to someone, and they just kind of walk right past you and don't even look at you. And then in your mind, you make up this story about why they didn't say hi, and they probably don't like you, and they judged you, and all of a sudden, you've got this grievance against them. What you didn't know is their hearing aid wasn't on. That's a perceived wrong. It's real to you, but it's perceived. And so as you have grievances, some of them are real, some of them are perceived, forgive those. Now, obviously, if you have a chance, talk to someone about those perceived wrongs. I had someone once talk to me. They said, you know, Alvin, this situation happened, and I felt like this, and you were doing this, and I had no idea I was doing any of that. But they brought it up, and I was able to speak with them about their perceived, that they had perceived something that wasn't real. But it was a win both ways because it actually encouraged me the next time I was in a similar situation to be cognitive of what I might do that might be perceived in a weird or wrong way. And so it was a win-win because the next time I was in that situation, I acted in a different kind of way so I wouldn't perceive, you know, be a grievance to someone else without meaning to. And so if you have an opportunity, bring those things, bring reconciliation. Maybe it's perceived and you talk to someone and they say, oh, I didn't mean that. And you're like, all right, I let it go. And maybe it's a chance to bring reconciliation where you feel like you've been wronged. So forgive. Forgive any grievances that you have. Be kind and gentle. Act in humility and with a long-suffering kind of personality. Bear with each other. You know, I think there's some real wisdom in this passage for our culture and for our church. But I think as a culture, we've been moving in a direction. I'm going to be, you know, kind of blunt here, but I think we live in an easily offended culture. We're just offended about everything. I mean, everything nowadays is either sexist or racist or somethingist. And we live in a society that's just very easily offended. You know, you could say something that was acceptable 10 years ago, and now you would offend a whole group of people by using that terminology because it's no longer politically correct. And we just have this easily offended culture we live in. And I think it's come into our personal lives. We all want something that we're offended about. I mean, if you walk around and say, I love purple, all the blue lovers are like, oh, I'm so offended. You know, it's like, come on. We just live in an easily offended. I think it's in our lives and it's in our church. And there was a figure of speech I want to just talk about because I think Paul, he references this with bear with each other, forgive any grievances, be a long-suffering kind of person. There's a figure of speech a friend of mine told me a few years back. And I'll just kind of set up the figure of speech because I think it's kind of funny. And it helped us, I think, become less easily offended. In boxing, you wear like a belt or a band. And if you hit below the belt, they say, it's an offense. It's a grievance. You did something wrong. You can't hit below the belt in boxing. And so me and my friend were talking. We were talking about stuff. And he started talking about people that are easily offended. And he used this figure of speech. He said, it's not hard to hit below the belt when they wear their belt up here. And he pointed to his neck. And you know, as a culture, I think, and as people sometimes, we put our belt way too high. And it's not hard for people to hit below the belt when you're walking around wearing your belt up here. And for some of us, Paul would say, lower your belt. Just lower your belt. Bear with each other. Forgive any grievances. Be a long-suffering kind of person. Bear with each other. Here's a 3,000-year-old proverb. Two of them that deal with this lower the belt idea. And Proverbs 12:16 says this, fools show their annoyance at once, but the prudent overlook an offense or an insult. Fools, this is what he's saying, fools only think about right now and right here. And if for a fool, he says, right now and right here, if you've been offended, boom, you just show it right now and right here because you're not thinking about tomorrow or next Thursday or next year. But the prudent, and the prudent are those who think ahead, how is this going to work out moving forward next month or next year? The prudent overlook an insult because it's better in the long run. In Proverbs 19, a few chapters later, Proverbs 19, 11 says this, a person's wisdom yields patience, long-suffering. Wisdom yields patience. It is to one's glory to overlook an offense. It's to one's glory. You know, lower your belt. Be a long-suffering kind of person. It's to your glory to overlook an offense. The invertedness of this would be it's to your shame to make everything an offense. It's to your glory to overlook the small things. You know, I got to give some love out to Troshu. Last week, I was really hard on Troshu. I gave it to him pretty strong. And you know, it was a test to see how high your belt was, okay? You passed the test. So I think we got to give him some love. We got to give Troshu some love. That's right. Got to give Troshu some love. You know, some people say, Lord, don't send me to Africa. Some say, don't send me to Troshu. But, you know, I just, lower the belt. Okay, I love Troshu. So he says, you know, bear with each other. Forgive one another as the Lord forgave you. That's the standard. That's the level. Because what he's writing is this. Be formed into the very image of Jesus. Bear, be kind, be humble like Jesus. Be a long-suffering kind of person like Jesus. And forgive like Jesus. Be formed into the very image of Jesus. And forgive as Jesus forgave you. Not because you earned it, not because you deserved it. He forgave you. And as others offend you, forgive them. As others, you have a grievance against the church. It may be legit, it may be perceived. Work that out, but then forgive as the Lord forgave you. You know, become part of the church. Become part, invest, get involved in the church. Because the church, as imperfect as it is, it forms us into the image of Jesus. You know, today I think, because there's so many churches, I think it almost promotes this inability to be a long-suffering kind of person. Because there's so many churches in North America, and Three Hills has so many churches, I've often said, we don't have one church on every street corner, we have two churches on every street corner. It just almost promotes this idea that as soon as it gets hard, I jet. As soon as it, you know, I don't like someone, I don't like that, we just jet. And in Paul's day, there was one church. In many of the communities, he planted churches. There's just one church. If you didn't like the pastors, like, that was your only choice. If you didn't like the worship, that was your only choice. If you didn't like the way that guy blew his nose, that was the only choice you had. You had to stay in that church or there was no other church. And so I think there's this, there's almost, you know, this promotion because there's we can have all of our choices of this and that and that. And if we don't like it, we just go to another church. And I think we've lost the art of bearing with each other. We've lost the art of forgiving one another, of letting go of grievances. We've lost the art of long suffering. Now, hear me out. It's not sin to leave a church and go to another. But if you find yourself kind of going from church to church every time things get hard, I think you're stunting God's development in you. You're stunting the formation of Christ in you. When it gets hard, be a long-suffering kind of person. When you're offended, be a forgiving person. Don't be easily offended. Bear with one another. And then Paul writes, you know, so I just say, get involved in the church. Get involved in a church. Get involved in Mount Olive Church. If this is your church and you say, hey, I think I'm going to make this my church, I want to say, get involved here. Get deeply involved. And I guarantee you, at some point you'll be offended, and at some point you may even be wronged. And then I say, let Christ be formed in you. Forgive. Bear with Mount Olive Church. And if you're a visitor and you're part of another church, go back to that church and say, I'm going to be more involved and more committed and more part of the body than I've ever been. Because Paul says, this is going to form you into the image of Jesus. And Paul wraps this whole section up. He says, listen, and over all these virtues, you know, kindness, gentleness, humility, long-suffering, put on love, which is like the pin that holds them together. It binds them all together in perfect unity. And then he says, here's what the outcome will be. And he says it as an outcome and a command. And it's this. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, which is a command, but it's also an outcome. As you live this, you will have peace in your heart, your own heart. and in the heart of the church. And it's a command also, let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as one members of one body, not 17, one body, you were called to peace and be thankful. Again, a command and an outcome. Be thankful. You will be thankful. You know, the church is not perfect. The church is not for the perfect, because the imperfect church, it forms us. It forms us. And so the first trump card, I call it a trump card, but we don't like to use Trump anymore because that president, but the meaning's still the same. The card that is greater reason than, you know, we have lots of reasons to say, I give up on the church, I should just give up on the church, it's not worth it. The first trump card is this, the imperfect church forms you. You cannot walk the journey with Jesus alone. You need the church, as imperfect as it is, and get this, because of its imperfections, it forms you. It will form you into the image of Christ if you let it. So I want to ask you a few questions. In what areas of your life do you need to forgive and make reconciliation? Maybe there's some areas where you have some grievances, and you don't know even if they're perceived or real, but it's time for you to go to that person and have a conversation. Remember, we approach people with gentleness, meekness, but it's time that you set that straight and you work that out with someone in the church. In what areas do you need to lower your belt? You know, you're like, oh man, I've been wearing that belt like around my neck. It's just too high. I need to drop the belt. In what areas do you need to lower your belt and become a long-suffering kind of person, like a long shovel guy? You know, what areas do you need to get involved in the church? I want to spur some of you on a little bit in closing. You know, maybe you're the kind of person, you go to church, you know, once or twice a year. I want to kind of push you a bit. Why don't you start making that once or twice a month? And some of you have been coming to church, you know, I come once or twice a month, I'm just kind of inconsistent. I want to push you a bit. Why not make that 3 or 4 times a month? And some of you are like, I've been going to church for 35 years, but you've always stayed at arm's length. You come Sunday morning, but you don't want to be in an intentional relationship. You don't want to get too close to people. You want to hold them off. And I want to say, why don't you take the next step for you, which is get involved in a small group. Get involved in a group of people that you're going to be a little more real with. And you're like, I go to church, but you just kind of hold people off at arm's length. Why not get involved in a small group? And here's the deal. Get involved in a small group that isn't all like you, where you have to bear with one another and forgive some grievances along the way. Get involved in a small group. Maybe you've been in a small group and your next step is to get into a more intentional relationship, and that's being a mentorship relationship. We have Guardians of Grace at the church, which is for women who want to be in a one-on-one mentorship situation and just get in a deeper relationship. We have men's Bible studies and men's prayer groups of 3 or 4, you know, men that pray together. And I just want to encourage you, get involved in the local church a little bit more, because it will form you into the very image of Jesus. If you don't show up, you can't be spurred on. But here's the deal. You've also been asked to be part of, to show up, to spur others on. You know, some of you students, you're in youth ministry and you're like, I just don't want to go to youth because there's some kids I don't like. Bear with them. Start going to youth again. Come on. Bear with one another. Any differences and grievances that you've had. We were not created to walk alone. You were made to follow Jesus in community, in the church. So I want to tell you, get involved. Let the church form you. Get off your butt and get connected. No more excuses, no more whining, and no more complaining. Lower your belt and get involved. And if that was too direct because you're more of an indirect person, I'm sorry. Now get involved, okay? Let's bow to pray. Father, this has been a real challenge because we've had some fun with this message and we've had some laughter, but a lot of what we've talked about is very real and very deep. And we have differences, and they're very deep. And we've been hurt, and some of those hurts are very deep, and some of us just want to give up on the church. But God, may we be encouraged to not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but to spur one another on. And that means to love and good deeds. That means to kindness and gentleness, to be long-suffering, to bear with one another and forgive. God, we've heard a lot. God, would you give us strength to live this out? Soften us. And those barriers that have kept us at arm's length, would you tear them down and help us to get involved for the good of the church, because we're part of it, but for the good of us as well. I pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen.